Hello, welcome to The Fat Lip, the podcast for fat people about fat people. I'm your host, Ash, and today we're doing a rerun of an episode I did over a year ago now with my friend Allison. And this one's all about fat air travel. Now, I decided to run this episode again because in it we talked about Southwest Airlines and their customer size policy. And there's been a little bit of a development there in the past couple of weeks, so I wanted to talk about that. So if you're not familiar, Southwest's policy for customer of size states that customers who do not fit in one seat will be given a second seat. That's just like the simple way to say the customer size policy. Basically, Southwest requests that if you know that you'll need a second seat and you can, that you reserve two tickets. And then after you fly, you can request a refund for that second seat. If you can't afford to purchase the second ticket ahead of time, though, the customer size policy states that one will be provided to you. And this is how it has worked for several years now. And I've used this policy many times. Allison has used it countless times. And countless other fat people have used it also. However, after a confusing and embarrassing experience a couple of weeks ago, Allison was told that there was a policy change that had imposed some limits on the customer size policy. So basically what happens is when you get to the airport and you go to the ticketing agent, if you request a second seat or if it is determined that you need a second seat, if the flight isn't full, you're provided with that second ticket. So nothing has changed there. This is how it's always worked. Now, previously, if your flight was totally full, you were still given the extra ticket. And then at the gate, the agent would ask for other passengers to volunteer to take another flight in exchange for incentives like points or sometimes cash, etc. Essentially, the ticket agent would oversell the flight and then the gate agent would find the space. And this rarely happens that they have to do this. I've been told by reps several times that often there's at least one seat held back, so that in case a customer of size needs it, or in case there's something wrong with another seat on the plane, that, or in case, you know, a Southwest employee needs it, there's usually one seat held out from the public so that they can use it in those cases. So this rarely happens that a flight is completely sold and there's no extra seats on the plane. If it does happen in the past, that's when they've gone to, asking other passengers to go on a different flight. However, what Allison found out a couple weeks ago is that at some point Southwest changed their policy, and ticket agents are no longer supposed to oversell the flight, even to comply with customer of size. So basically, now they're saying they're not going to oversell and then ask other passengers to go to another, to take another flight. So the policy seems to not always be enforced, but it can be. So essentially what this means is that if you get to the airport with one ticket and you need a second, if your flight isn't full, you'll still be given one. However, if your flight is totally full, you may be asked to take a later flight that they can get you two seats on. So they're no longer going to ask other passengers to be bumped. They will ask you to be bumped in this situation. It's not ideal, and it's really going to impact poorer fats more than anyone because it's expensive. I mean, air travel is expensive, and having to pay double is just out of reach for some people. So poorer people are going to be the most affected. And I've actually been in contact with Southwest Public Relations Department, and I attempted to get a representative to have a short call with me about this episode, but they declined. Basically, what I wanted was to just have someone on the phone that I could speak to person and impress upon them how important this policy is and how it's essential for fat travelers especially poor fat travelers. And even though a rep isn't going to come on the show to talk about it, I am still going to write a letter because I think this is so important. And I just want to make sure that, you know, my voice is heard even a little bit. And I have requested further information from them. So if and when I hear from them, I'll include that in a later episode. In the meantime, this episode with Allison is full of great information about flying while fat, and I hope it's helpful. Again, if you're flying Southwest, just keep in mind that if your flight is full, they may ask to put you on another flight. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're not going to get on the plane, on a plane, you're not going to get to your destination. It just means that you might have to get on a different flight. And you can probably improve your chances by flying at non-peak times, but always have a contingency plan in place in case you are bumped. It's just smart advice. Just don't book a flight that's, you know, 2 hours before you have to be at a wedding or something. Make sure you have some cushion just in case something happens. Otherwise, you're going to be fine. So go take a vacation. It's going to be easy. It's going to be fun. Okay, so now we're going to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsor, Big Fig. And then I'll send you right to the episode. I love to travel, but maybe the number one thing I miss when I'm away from home is being able to sleep in my own bed. And I have to tell you, ever since I got a Big Fig, that feeling of longing is even stronger. Big Fig is the first mattress system made especially for bodies like mine. It features hybrid technology that springs and foam that creates the perfect combination of comfort and support. I've been sleeping on my Big Fig for over 6 months, and there's not even a hint of a dip or a sag in this thing. Its strong reinforced edges hold up under me, and the extra strong foundation still feels totally solid. Plus, I opted for the Big Fig frame that's made of recycled railroad steel, and it is just as sturdy as it sounds. Like, this thing's not going anywhere. I am thoroughly enjoying my Big Fig, and you can enjoy one too by going to bigfigmattress.com and using the code FATLIP at checkout for $100 off of your purchase and to let them know I sent you. So go travel, but come home to a Big Fig. Okay, so now we're going to go to the episode with Allison. I hope you enjoy, and I hope this change in Southwest policy doesn't discourage you from traveling. You can still absolutely do it. You can still absolutely travel and have a great time. And hopefully these tips will help you. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Hello, and welcome to the Fat Lip. It has been a little over a month. Took a little bit of a break, but we are back in the swing of things, and we have a new episode for you today. And today we're talking about air travel. So my good friend Allison wrote an amazing blog post for thefatlip.com specifically addressing super fat issues in air travel. And Allison actually said this when we were interviewing for this show today, but I lost it because sometimes technical issues happen. So what she said was the reason that she decided or that we decided that a post like this was necessary was that recently we've seen a lot of talk in the fat positive community about air travel for fat people. And it talks about, you know, being uncomfortable on airplanes and having other passengers be uncomfortable as well because of how much space you take up. And about, you know, things like seatbelt extenders. But there isn't a lot out there that addresses the needs of supersized people or people who have air travel issues that go beyond that. For people that need second seats or that need pre-board or who need extra time. And there just isn't much about those experiences out there. So Allison wrote a very comprehensive blog post about this and about things that super fat passengers should know and ways that you can prepare yourself and equip yourself with resources to make your travel go as smoothly as possible. So that is on thefatlip.com's blog, and I will post a link to that in the show notes of this show. And let's get right into it. The first thing I think we should talk about is the Southwest policy. So we always recommend that you fly Southwest because they have by far the most generous people of size policy. And if you can't fly Southwest, it's important that you, you know, call the airline or look up their on their website what their people of size policy might be, if they have one. If you can't find anything online, I would definitely give them a call. It's important to find out what the policy is before you get to the airport, before you even buy your ticket, if possible, because you never know what kind of situation you could be put in. And it's just better to figure these things out ahead of time so that you are all set, nothing to worry about on the day that you have to go to the airport. But if you are flying Southwest, you're a lucky lady because the policy is pretty good. Or a lucky person, not necessarily a lady.
God. I know, we're terrible. but we care about women. I'm sorry, we care about men too, I guess.
So, yes, the Southwest policy is the most generous. The Southwest policy states that if you are a customer of size who would require a second seat, meaning you don't fit comfortably in one seat with armrests down, you do qualify to receive a second ticket for the seat beside you for free, which you can either purchase ahead of time or you can talk to a gate agent when you get to the airport to receive that. Allison talks about this all in her blog post that she made for the Fat Lip. So if you haven't read that, you should check it out. But the most important thing to note here is that if you do need a second seat, well, first of all, we should say that if you aren't sure whether or not you need a second seat, there are two Facebook groups that you should have in your back pocket. There is one. The first is called Flying While Fat, and the second is Flying While Super Fat. Those should be readily searchable on Facebook. They are restricted groups that not everybody can get into, but you can request admission. And they're really great resources. If you have a flight coming up and you aren't sure if you're going to need a second seat, if you haven't flown in a while, that's a great place to go to sort of discern whether you might need a second seat. By talking to other people in the group and stuff. So start there if you aren't sure if you need a second seat. If you do think you do, Southwest will provide that to you for free. The policy is that if possible, you should purchase that second seat when you purchase your initial ticket, if at all possible. But, you know, for some people, that's not financially feasible. So if you cannot afford a second seat, when you are booking your flight, the most important thing we can say today is when you go to check in at the airport, it is very important that you raise this issue with the agent in front of you. And it doesn't have to be, you know, anything too overt, and it doesn't have to be a big public declaration that you're so fat you need two seats. Just discreetly say that you would like to utilize the customer of size policy. And most of the time they are going to know exactly what you're talking about and be very accommodating. If you need further information about that, Allison's blog post is an excellent resource. So definitely read that. And I think she didn't address this in her blog post, but it is also important to note that if you are planning on getting a second seat when you arrive, or even if you've purchased a second seat ahead of time, you do not want to do the online early check-in, because an agent actually needs to attach your two tickets together if you've purchased a second seat, or assign you a second seat at the airport if you have not. So do not do early check-in. And fortunately, because you have a second seat, you don't have to, you don't have to worry about, you know, not getting in a good boarding group because you haven't done early check-in, because if you have a second seat, you're going to get to pre-board. And so basically what happens is, once you've gotten your tickets from the ticketing agent and gone through security, you're going to go to the gate agent at your gate and show them that you have two seats, and they're going to know that that means you get to pre-board. And so what they're going to do is give you a little
envelope, plastic envelope thing with information on pre-boarding. And for the most part now, they just print out a pre-board card for you automatically when they give you your ticket. In some airports, I always check with the gate agent. They don't even need the pre-board card to pre-board. You can just show them your second seat, or they also have your name, like they'll know me at the gate, which is always fun. So basically what that means is you get to board before the A group. And the reason for that is because they want you on there first for your comfort, and also so that you have the greatest probability of finding two seats together. Because you need two seats together, unlike another person who it would be super great for, with a family, obviously important. But so you just kind of accumulate yourself near the gate before check-in, and then you will get to go up and on the flight before the A group. And then you get to kind of just go all by your lonesome and find wherever you want to go. I particularly recommend the front row, if as long as it's an older plane and the armrests go up, obviously. And then you get a lot more leg room too, which is awesome. And then I'm usually sometimes the first, within the first, you know, five people on the plane. And then I kind of murmur to the flight attendant, can I please have an extra seatbelt or seatbelt extender? They know, they will know what you're talking about, and then they will get you that as well. So it's very easy, and it's much more comfortable boarding when you're pre-boarding, because then you also don't have to squeeze past a lot of people to get on or get off the flight. So,
right, great. Right. Yes. So, yeah, so you definitely want to make sure that you are getting your second seat and that you are pre-boarding, because it's just so much easier to not have to wrestle yourself onto a plane with a million other shuffling, angry passengers.
Yeah.
So it makes it, makes it a little bit,
if you can avoid wrestling with an angry passenger, unless that's your thing. if you want to do that, just make somebody angry when they sit down next to you and say, do you want to wrestle while people are boarding? And then go for it. But personally, yeah, I'd rather just put on a headphone and like set the expectation that you're not going to talk to me if you sit next to me, because that's the kind of person I am.
Me too. Like, I am not a chatty plane person. Like, I just want to get through this.
As soon as someone starts, I'm just like, oh God. Like, a couple flights ago, this woman sat next to me and she was just like, I'm going to be your new best friend. And I was just like, oh God, no. No,
you're great.
And I was like, where are my little treats, like my book or whatever I need to make sure you know that that's not going to be the case. I'm going to sit here silently and not interact with you for 3 hours, because that's how I handle a flight. yeah. So anyway, you can wrestle if you want. But yes, sitting in the front is great. It also gives you more access to the bathroom, which we can talk about as well.
Yes. Also another good transition.
I'm very smooth, like chunky butter. I don't know what that means. So one thing, bathrooms have always been a point of contention for pretty much anyone on a plane, unless you're tiny, because they are small for everybody. Even if you're average size, you're like, oh, this is a small size room. But I've seen almost all fat people who I've seen posting on Facebook or have interacted with just say, I don't use a bathroom because I cannot fit in it. And while that I'm sure is true for many people, I would like to put out there that it is probably less true for fewer people than are those who assume that they can't fit. Because I'm going to admit this, I am a nervous peer. So I will not be able to make it on a plane if I think that I cannot pee for like 4 hours. Like there's no way that I'm going to make that. I've had hour flights where I will make it, or an hour and a half flight, sure. But if I think in my head, you cannot pee for 4 hours, within 20 minutes, I will have to pee and it will not happen. Like that is how my body works. It's like, oh, you think you're going to do this? No, here comes a bladder. So I have just had to say, okay, let's see if I can get in there. And I am well past the size of many people who have said they cannot get in there. So logically, you would think that I cannot. But like a weird piece of origami, I still try and have been successful 100% of the time, knock on wood, to squeeze myself into that bathroom. It is not roomy. I take up pretty much 80% of the room when I'm in there, but I'm able to get that nervous pee out of me and then make it through the rest of my flight. So in this article, I'm not trying to discount people who legitimately can't fit, because there certainly are, because it is a small room, but I will implore you to try. And if you feel more comfortable trying in the back of the plane and want to sit back there, like that's your,
or like even waiting until everyone else has gotten off the plane just to see if you can do it for right. Your flight home.
Yeah, exactly. If you have like two flights and one of them's like 45 minutes and you can make it, and then you just want to do a little test before your layover, try it out before what people aren't there, or even after you pre-board, like save your seat and then go try the bathroom before people get on there. Just to try to feel it out. Because for those who also are nervous peers, because I don't think it's just me, you probably want to have that little sense of satisfaction to know if you can make it in there or not. And I guarantee so many more people than who think that they can't do it. Wait, I don't even know. I don't know how to construct.
I think we know what so you're getting at here.
More people can than think they can is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So, well, I will admit to being a person that does not try. But I am a pee holder, which I do not recommend. Do not hold your pee. That's how you get kidney stones. I know this fact intimately, and it's not good to hold your pee. But next time I fly,
you for that. So
I know. Next time I fly, I am definitely going to try.
Yeah,
and we'll see.
It may not work. I'm not going to promise a miracle, but I just think that if people can try, more people are going to make it. And if not, I put some links on there. Like having some version of a shiwi, which allows you to stand. Because to me, the larger issue is it's a smaller space where you're sitting than when you're standing a little bit. So fitting my hips and whatever parts you have, butts, and I mean, they're all pretty much the same parts, but into that space where you sit down is harder than when you stand. So there's also tools that you can use to basically pee standing up like a dude. Obviously we're talking about women, so apologies for being cisgendered female speaking at the moment. But for those who normally have to pee sitting down, sometimes it's harder to do that. So there are tools out there that can allow you to stand. And that could help. So if you can at least squeeze through the door, you can be able to go to the bathroom a little bit on that flight.
Yes. So
recommend.
Or, I mean, there's always the diaper solution. I'm just saying, right. Like some people have to wear diapers on planes.
You on a plane and be like, I know what you're packing.
I have never worn a diaper on a plane, but I'm not saying that I wouldn't. Because, like, maybe an international flight, you never know.
I'm a little bit concerned about your volume at this time, because I feel like a diaper doesn't hold very much. And, like, there could be
Really know, because I'm not a diaper wearer, but I would... Allegedly, you don't pee as much as you think you do.
I don't know. I feel like sometimes I need a couple diapers.
I mean, maybe you should wear two then.
Oh, God. Now,
oh, that will be that'll be great when you go through your TSA pat down.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh God, Yeah, oh, we have to talk about TSA. But yeah, I guess A-line skirts do make sense as a sensible outfit for travel if you're wearing 2+ diapers on a flight. So
yeah.
There we go. Now we're...
But I mean, no shame. If you've got to wear a diaper, you've got to wear a diaper. Like, you do what you got to do. Don't, like, let your travel experience be limited because you're afraid of peeing on a plane.
Yeah.
If you got to wear a diaper, you got to wear a diaper.
Although apparently also there are at the hospital when I stayed over, they literally made me sleep on a pee pad this week. So apparently using pee pads for humans is also a thing. I didn't realize that, but I wouldn't advocate anyone to.
Girl, I knew that because when you have a bad period, sometimes you need a pee pad.
I just put a towel down. I didn't know pee pads for people. Oh, that's
not. No. They do, and I own some, and I'm not ashamed.
That's good to know. I mean, it's better than...
You can buy them on Amazon.
Well, now I've used one now. I have... And then also, they just...
You have peed on it?
I didn't pee on it. No, I don't know how much it can absorb. But yeah, I guess you probably wouldn't want to do that. But in case you had a spare pee pad and you didn't fit in a diaper, I guess that's an option.
It is. I mean, listen, you do what you have to do.
I feel like TSA is probably the last thing to talk about, right? Unless there was more.
Yes, agreed. Okay, so we want to talk about the TSA. Every fat person that has traveled in the last, 10 years, 20 years most now, knows that airport security is a thing that we deal with, and it is quite frequently difficult and frequently embarrassing for fat people, because the issue is, so most at least large airports have the big three, what did I, the 3D, no, the big walk-in, the big walk-in TSA scanners. And so most fat people can at least get into those. I am a very, very fat person and I can fit in them. However, usually when a very fat person goes through those scanners, it can't decipher a lot of flesh. Like it doesn't know how to read through like very dense flesh. So often when you go through a TSA scanner, you will get pulled to the side and you will have to go through the pat down process. And so the TSA policy is that for pat downs, you should be patted down by a TSA agent that is the same sex as you present yourself as, and you are allowed to go into a private room if you'd like. And they're supposed to, only pat you down to an extent, the extent necessary to find, to decide if there are any weapons on you, right? Unfortunately, there are a lot of, there are a lot of ways in which TSA pat-downs go wrong or are more uncomfortable than they should be. And so let's start with the same-sex officer issue, especially for trans people, often, or people that are non-binary genders. There isn't an agent available to you that does present the way you do. So you are forced to, choose one side or the other, male or female agent. And that can be very uncomfortable, especially if you're trans. So that is a big issue. The other issue is that often when you go through the scanner, often my legs set off the whatever the alarm thing is that says that your scan isn't good. So that's where the agent will focus their attention, right? I mean, they still do a thorough pat down, and like they will often go under the underwire of your bra and like in your waistband, around your collar. And then they like pretty aggressively pat down the parts that were indecipherable on the scanner. And it can be very invasive and uncomfortable. And so, unfortunately, there's little that we can do about that. So I have been researching this. Alice and I have both talked about this, and there we have looked it up on the ACLU's website. And the ACLU is aware that this is a problem, and they are working on it. They've filed many suits against the TSA, but the pat-down issue is on their radar. And if you have had a pat-down that you feel has violated your privacy or your civil liberties, there is a form you can fill out on the ACLU website to report that to them. They are collecting these stories because they need to build a case. So if that's something you've experienced, you should definitely fill that out. I'm going to link that in the show notes. But it's just, I mean, it just sucks that all fat people or fat people over a certain size know that this is just part of flying, and that unfortunately we've been sort of forced to give up certain levels of privacy in order to travel, and it sucks. So yeah,
I mean, it just sucks because it's a thing that you have to accept. Like, there's no choice other than TSA pre-check, which we can talk about. If you can't do a pre-check, and it sounds like also potentially sometimes when you can do a pre-check, you're going to get a pat down. And depending on your size and the shape of your body and the way that your body is comprised, I guess I'm trying to figure out a way to not say how your roles are, essentially.
Right.
You could be appearing or obscuring something more on the scan. And I've tried to figure it out, like, if it's something I'm wearing, because, like, sometimes I'll just get, like, an ankle, which I don't even have a roll, well, maybe a little bit around there. So I don't know necessarily where the correlation is between where I'm going to get a pat-down, if it's the full kit and caboodle pat-down or what. But depending on how your body is shaped, essentially, you're going to have various parts go off in the scanner. And it's just something that, until they change the machine, which I don't know if they ever will, you just have to accept it, and that sucks. But the thing that you don't have to accept is if they do something that is over the line, and that you feel crosses that line into what should be personal and private and not something they should be doing. I found, in terms of what they understand and maybe bodies or types of people that they're less familiar with, they always ask the question of, like, is there a part that's sore or sensitive? Like, they know to ask that question, but I don't think they know necessarily how to give an appropriate pat down. Sometimes they know the things that they have to do, but I think had a line crossed in one recent experience, and I don't think that going to a private room could have really solved for that. I think there's just maybe a lack of training about different bodies and different people that TSA is not giving to their agents that could be done, and that I'm assuming would come with what the ACLU is fighting for. So definitely make sure that if something happens to you that's more than just the standard, which I have to say the standard is pretty low, like reaching under your boobs and in your waist and like doing the line of your butt basically is standard. If it goes beyond where for me it was like getting a little close to internal touch, then you need to make sure that that is voiced to the ACLU or to another agency that's going to hear that story and fight against it.
Right. And Unfortunately, what a lot of reporting has found is that the TSA pat-downs aren't that productive, and they can't really detect as much as you think that they can. Probably not enough to justify the extent of their pat-downs. But what we've learned about the TSA and about a lot of security measures is that the illusion of security is what they feel is important. And because if you feel safe, if you feel safe, then you are more likely to, you know, fly safely. And also if, you know, bad guys think that they might be detected, they're less likely to do bad things. So a lot of the process of the pat down revolves around that concept. So unfortunately, we are sort of forced to submit to this illusion of safety, and we've have to give up some of our rights to privacy to do that. And I think that's really fucked up. But that is unlikely to change, at least under this administration. So if, you know, personal privacy and the TSA is something that is important to you, the best thing I think that you can do is, you know, vote your conscience and vote for policies that you think are going to, or vote for candidates that are going to protect your civil liberties and your privacy. And, you know, there are some people out there that are listening to this that are considering running for local office, consider, you know, thinking about these things when you're building your platform, because these are things, personal privacy is a very important issue, and it is becoming more and more of a concern for a lot of people in a lot of different areas, and this is only one of them. So yeah.
And it's something that people will care about in voting, I imagine, like if you have it on your platform. It's certainly something that appeals to people. Having like civil liberties is obviously important to most people. So and rights to privacy and things like that. So disappointing to hear about the fact that the pat downs don't actually do anything or do minimal to help. And it's just the illusion of like forcing people like assuming that they have to adhere to security, even though the security is not actually checking for anything very much. One thing that always comes to my mind that I've never done, I don't know if you've ever done this or talked to people about this, but you know how if you are, so maybe you don't know, but if you are in a wheelchair, you get to go but if you're a wheelchair, you go through the metal scanner. I've always thought about or wondered if I could ask to go through that metal scanner, just ask the agent, and I've never done it. I'm just curious if somebody wanted to try that and see, like, and it's not just wheelchair. I shouldn't call that out because that's really like inappropriate, but certain people, like I think also mothers, like if you have an infant, will go through the metal detector. And generally, if you go through the detector, because they don't have a screen where they're seeing parts of your body that are of concern, they're not going to give you a pat down, or they'll be less likely to give you a pat down. So I have to wonder if you asked an agent at your airport if you could do that, if they would let you go through that as an alternative.
Well, I will say that. So I have gone through TSA on a scooter before. If you can walk, they can require you to get in the scanner anyway. If you can stand, even if you go through on a scooter, if you can stand, they will still pat you down.
Really?
Yeah.
That sucks.
If you can't stand, then they'll give you a pat down in your chair or in your scooter. But it's also, that's the other thing, is it's all based on the discretion of the TSA officer that is, or the TSA agent that is, you know, facilitating your scan. Some people that are in wheelchairs don't get patted down on some days. I mean, sometimes you do, but it's not like a reliable way to avoid it. So the official TSA policy is you have two options. You consent to going through the scanner, or you consent to the pat down. And some people choose not to go through the scanner and just do the pat down because they don't want, because the scanner is already problematic because, you know, there's an agent in a back room somewhere that can see through your clothes. And that's also a huge violation of privacy. So some people choose not to do that. But you still have to submit to a pat down if you don't go through the scanner. And so I don't know if I feel like there are no good options at this point. Yeah. But there is, so, there's pre-check. So we don't know if that, if pre-check guarantees that you are not, that you don't have to go through the scanner. Well, we do know if you have pre-check, then you get to go through the, metal detector instead of the optical scan, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And not all airports have pre-check, so it's not an exact science.
Right.
Apparently Indianapolis doesn't, which is completely random, but my airport does, so thank you. So it's not totally perfect, but it does like take down the probability of you having to go through the scanner. I am garbage person, human being, just made of garbage, like a little... a heap with glasses. So I have only just gotten my TSA application in this week, even though I've been flying for work for 3.5 to 4 years, because I don't know what's wrong with me. So I wish that I could speak to that experience being super fat and being in TSA pre-check. Because I think they still, at least based on the guidelines that we're seeing on the site, they still have the right to give you a pat down. But I would like to be able to speak to the experience and the frequency of that pat down, as opposed to the puffer, whatever that machine is, pat down, which is literally 100% of the time for me. And probably like 70-80% of the time is like the full under boob butt crack between the legs pat down. So even if I could get that pat down down to like 20% of the time, it would be a huge improvement. So will hopefully be able to speak to that soon.
Right. And we should probably say what the pre-check is in case people don't know. So TSA pre-check is a program that you can apply for, that you have to be interviewed ahead of time and you know, submit to a background check. And if you pass and are given TSA pre-check, the advertised benefits are that you don't have to take off your shoes, you don't have to take your laptop out of your bag, you know, you can keep your belt on, that kind of stuff. But you also don't have to go through the big, you know, optical scanner. You just go through the metal detector instead. But as we said, we aren't sure whether you will still always be given a pat down. We know that sometimes you can, but beyond that, we are not sure. But so if you have pre-check and you have information and would like to share it, and I would love to, you know, make a note on a later show about whether or not pre-check absolves you from the pat down of doom.
Amazing. Yeah,
we would love to know that, and we would love that to be the case. And it's, I mean, it sucks that if you're a very fat person, you just know that you're going to have this, you know, probably invasive pat down, because the machine can't understand your body. And it sucks that the only way to possibly even improve that situation is to go through the pre-check process, which is like many more steps.
Yeah,
and it feels like part of the fat tax, like that you have to pay. And we already pay enough extra money for being fat. So
yeah.
Sucks, but
what if TSA pre-check could give me a discount on all my clothes to make up for
the extra money
that I'm paying in my life?
Be so worth it.
I have to say also about the metal detector, It's also not super great when you have, when you are very wide or have wide hips or wide parts. Like, I still have to go inside pretty much sideways or on an angle to the metal detector. So, and if you hit it, then it goes off. And I've also gone off on it, because of having a lot of underwire, which is why I started wearing no underwire on planes. But then you got the, like, under the boob search for the puffer. So it's, you can't win, but, so it's not, it may not be great for everybody depending on your width either way. And I don't know how that would work if you had pre-check and you couldn't fit through the metal detector. You probably would have to do a pat down, which defeats the amazing purpose in a lot of ways of pre-check, but.
But at least you don't have to take your shoes off, which, I mean, that's huge when you're super fat.
I can start wearing different shoes to airports. I literally wear the same pair of shoes every time. Yeah. So the metal detector is not necessarily always amazing, but it's better than the puffer for sure.
Right. Okay, we should wrap this up because you have a meeting soon.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I love meetings. This is...
Me too. No.
Nope.
So yeah, so that's travel. Ta-da!
It's wrapped. It's been wrapped. I mean, I don't know. It depends on what kind of person you are to wrap it up. Like, I am clearly the kind of person who wants to be able to have some degree of ducks in a row to prepare for a flight. And I think that I would assume that helps most people. Maybe some people are into less planning efforts. But I think if you have anxiety about fitting onto a plane, and your experience on a plane, there's more resources out there than there have been in the past. And there's definitely through the Facebook groups, through online research, through hopefully blog posts like this and other similar resources, you can be able to arm yourself with a plan and then feel more confident on the plane. And if you run into an issue, you can feel okay asking for help and know what your rights are, whether it be through security or through your airline or any experience that you're having. I think just doing research and preparing yourself is my overall best recommendation.
Yeah, agreed. I also want to add briefly, I'm going to talk about scooters in their own episode because I think that there's a lot to say. But if you are a person that does use a scooter or a wheelchair, traveling with a scooter is pretty damn easy. So if you do use a scooter or you just want to travel with one, the first thing you need to do when you book your ticket, there will be a question somewhere towards the end of the process that asks if you will require any accommodations for disabilities, or if you'll be using a wheelchair, and you want to say yes. And then it will ask you, you know, whether it's a scooter. Sometimes it will go even further and ask about whether the batteries are sealed. Most scooters do have sealed batteries. If you aren't sure, though, you should look at your manual. It will tell you whether or not your batteries are sealed. It may also ask you about the weight of your scooter. And also, if you don't know how much the scooter weighs, again, check the manual. It will tell you right in there. And so sometimes these questions happen when you're booking your ticket. If they don't, they will happen when you go to the ticketing agent on the day that you're flying. So what you have to do with the scooter is go to the ticketing agent. This is where you'll ask for your second seat. Also where you will ask to have your scooter checked in. If they didn't gather this information when you booked your ticket, they'll ask you now how much your scooter weighs and whether the batteries are sealed. So they'll just have you fill out a little form. And then they'll also, you know, write down what the scooter looks like, any major damage. And these are just so that when the scooter goes onto the plane, one, it's easy for them to find and determine which one is yours. When you arrive at your destination, and also to ensure that any damage that is done during the course of the flight is accounted for. So once that is taken care of, the ticketing agent will then give you a tag and attach it to your scooter, or ask you to attach it to your scooter. And it's basically just a claim tag, a gate claim tag. So that when you arrive at your destination, you make sure you get your scooter back. And then you are on your way. And so they will send you through security. And like I said earlier, I have gone through security on a scooter before. If you can walk, they will probably ask you to walk through the scanner, or go through the scanner. If you're a very fat person and the scanner shows obscured areas, then they will probably pat you down. Sometimes this has happened where they have just had me go through the metal detector. And then I was still had to do a pat down. I think the pat down is inevitable in most cases. And then they'll also check your scooter, look under it, swab it with their little, whatever that little doohickey is that they swab things with. And then once you have gotten through TSA, you're on your way. You will go to your gate and again, go to the gate agent. And because you're on a scooter, you're going to get to pre-board anyway, but because you have a second seat, that also qualifies you to pre-board. So you are double pre-board safe. But basically what will happen is you'll just wait at the gate near the door, with everyone else. And when the flight is ready to begin boarding, they will call you probably first, because they want to get your scooter under the plane before they start boarding everyone else, and they want to get you settled. So what happens is, in every case that I've experienced, you just drive the scooter down the jetway and right to the door of the plane. And usually there's a door there that goes down onto the conveyor belt that goes down into the bottom of the plane. And you will just get off your scooter. If your scooter folds at all, they'll ask you that. They'll have you show them how to fold it down, and then they will send you into your seat, and they will take care of it from there. And what they do is they carry it down and put it in the baggage hold with all the other baggage. And then you're good to go. And then when you arrive, they will probably ask you to wait till they can bring your scooter up. For me, this has always been once everybody else has deplaned, which is fine. Like, I don't want to crawl through those crowds anyway. So they will have you stay seated until your scooter is ready for you. And again, they bring it right to the door of the plane. And then so you just get on and drive back up the jetway and go on your merry way. And it's couldn't be easier. There's no extra fees associated or anything. So if you are a person that has trouble getting through airports or needs a scooter while you're at your destination, don't hesitate to do that, because it's nice and easy. So thank you, Allison, for coming on the show and writing that amazing blog post. It was very, very helpful. So if you have not read it, go read it, and I'll put links, and yeah, that's the show.
Awesome. Thanks. Thank you. And there's more info in there too. And hopefully less, verbose than this, but no guarantees.
Just read all the words.
Who likes words? Me.
Thank you again to Allison for writing the blog post and for coming on the show to talk about travel. Allison travels most weeks by plane, so she is expert level at this point. So her information, the information that she's provided, is invaluable. So thank you so, so much. And thank you, as always, to Star Crusher, who made the music that you've heard on today's show. Hear more at cstarcrusher.bandcamp.com. And thank you to our Patreon sponsor of the day, who is Grace H. If you would like to hear your name on the show, go to patreon.com/fatlip to find out how. And don't forget to follow the Fat Lip on social media. The links to all of the social media accounts are on www.thefatlip.com. And don't forget, while you're there, to check out the blog, because there's important stuff there. Okay, I will see you guys again in less than 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. I know that I definitely cannot use the shiwis because of my thighs. So if I can't fit in that plane, I might have to wear a diaper. It's just the way it is.
I bet you could make your own shiwi.
Like 3D print one. Travis does have a 3D printer now. So wait until I broach this. I mean, it's not a terrible idea.
I just...
This 3D printer is a little small, probably.
Well, I just think you could fashion a shiwi of your own that would work. Of all the things you could make that you have...
Like with a milk jug?
I don't know about that. I don't know how you would aim in a milk jug. You'd have to cut open the top. I'm just saying, of all the complicated things you've made in your life, food, clothing, all those things, really, is a shiwi going to be beyond your capacity? I don't think so. I have more faith in you than that to make a funnel for your urine on. I think that you could do that.
Okay, I'll work on it.
You've made a seam and like sequins and glitter and things. Like you can make a funnel with a tube. That I'm just saying, if pressed,
I'll add it to my list of projects.
I'm sure it should be at the top of that list. Who doesn't want that self-made custom shiwis?
Custom shiwis. Only if I can bedazzle them.
By ash she. No, that's bad. Ashwi.
Oh no, it's worse.
There's your new business venture. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
I'm an entrepreneur.